topic today is the Indian Residential Schools, the National Settlement. And our speaker is Rhonda Rustin, QC. Rhonda has been a lawyer in Lethbridge for the past 25 years. In 1992, Rhonda was honored by the YWCA as the woman of distinction, the last year that they had only one woman honored in that way. And Rhonda was honored for the passion and dedication to which she had brought to all the organizations she had served in our community at that time. So it comes as no surprise that for the past 10 years, past decade, Rhonda has brought that same passion and dedication to serving and representing 576 Aboriginal people from the Blood and Piegan Reserves in their lawsuits respecting damage caused to them as a result of their attendance in the four Indian residential schools that operated in southern Alberta. This is Rhonda's third presentation to our SACPA audience on this subject. First, several years ago, she introduced us to the Indian Residential Schools lawsuit, giving us informed awareness of this litigation. For many of us who were born and raised in Canada and living very close to First Nations reserves, this was a harsh introduction to the detailed damage caused to First Nations families and their children attending these schools. In 2006, following the government announcement that the Indian Residential School lawsuit settlement had been reached in principle, Rhonda again spoke to our SACPA audience, sharing details of the process to that date. Today, Rhonda has kindly once again consented to share the status of the approval of the settlement, the process that it is in at this time, and what the settlement proposes to address. Please join me in welcoming Rhonda Rustin.
Good afternoon, everybody. That'll be the first time I would hear that I would have difficulty being heard, but let me know. I made some notes for myself for today's presentation, not because I needed to be reminded of what has happened in the last 10 years, but because so much has happened, and I have lived and breathed this work every day for the past decade that it's easy for me to become lost. And indeed, in the last 10 years, there are many times when I have felt truly lost in this work and unable to make a difference. And I am pleased to say that I believe we are on the last leg of the journey towards a settlement, a national settlement of this issue, which we have called the Indian Residential School Shame. When I began this work in January of 1997, it was as a result of five very courageous men who had come from the Blood Reserve to tell me of their stories. And I will never forget my shock and horror learning about what had happened in the schools on the reserves when I was sitting in my comfortable public white school only 45 minutes away. It was truly a life-altering experience. And as a result of that, I considered it my mission to do two things, to try to bring some justice and some peace to the hearts of the Aboriginal people who would become my clients. And the second thing was to try to use this as an opportunity to educate the primarily white public about what had happened in the Indian residential schools in this country for well over 100 years, because we were never taught that they even existed, never mind what happened in them. And this is the third time I've been speaking at SACPA, and I could speak for the rest of my time about what those schools were about. But it is my third time. These lawsuits have been going on in this province for 8 years, and I hope there's been enough that we've all become educated to a certain degree and we don't have to go over that material again. But just suffice it to say that it was truly a tragic and shameful chapter in this country's history with its Aboriginal people. And I'm sure you've all read the printout that was the notice that had come around to you about this session, and I had crafted it in the way that I did because the quote there is from a judge in Ontario, one of 9 judges who heard before him our application seeking approval for the settlement. And I just want to read very briefly from another judge. This is the 9th judge, 9 out of 9 now, judges have been heard from. This is the Northwest Territories judge, and he released his decision approving the settlement just this past Monday, and today's Thursday, I think, so just this week. And he quotes from the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, which was released about 10 years ago. And the quote is, put simply, the residential school system was an attempt by successive governments to determine the fate of Aboriginal people in Canada by appropriating and reshaping their future in the form of thousands of children who were removed from their homes and communities and placed in the care of strangers. It goes on to say, tragically, the future that was created is now a lamentable heritage for those children and the generations that came after, for Aboriginal communities and indeed for all Canadians. The school system's concerted campaign to obliterate those habits and associations, Aboriginal languages, traditions and beliefs, and its vision of radical re-socialization were compounded by mismanagement and underfunding, the provision of inferior educational services, and the woeful mistreatment, neglect, and abuse of many children. Facts which were known to the department, to the government, and the churches throughout the history of the school system. I've lived that reality and worked with it for the past 10 years, and I can still never get over being angry. In 1997, briefly, when these 5 men came to see myself and another lawyer with whom I have worked on these cases for the past 10 years, Vaughn Marshall, we initially began to self-educate. It was very important for us to learn from the Aboriginal people of their experiences because goodness knows we weren't taught outside of those communities. And so I spent months and months and months of days on the reserve listening to stories, and people were very gracious in taking me into their homes and allowing me the privilege and the honor of listening to their stories. In 1999, we filed the lawsuits on the Indian residential school cases, and those were the first lawsuits to be filed in Alberta. There were lawyers in BC who had begun their work about 4 years earlier than us. And Alberta was actually the last province to get on board and start working on this issue. I think it's important to know how we started at the beginning to see what we achieved at the end of this decade. When we filed the lawsuits, what we sought on behalf of the people were general damages, money awards. In this country, We don't cut people's hands off or behead them, thankfully. What we do is we give monetary compensation when somebody has caused harm. And so in our lawsuits, we sought monetary compensation, money awards, for the abuse that was suffered by the children, which were already legally recognized to be wrongs in this country, sexual abuse, physical abuse. We sought damages, again, monetary compensation, for the loss of opportunity, coming to understand the inferior nature of the education delivered to the children, and I really believe deliberately so. You know, if you're not taught how to speak, you can hardly be on an equal playing field, and I think that was all part of the scheme. But anyway, we sought damages for loss of opportunity. We wanted and sought recognition for the loss of language and culture of the Aboriginal people. We all know that those schools set out, and if you read government policy, they use words like assimilation, which means really obliteration of everything that the Aboriginal people knew as part of their world. And that loss of language and culture almost resulted in the entire loss to the Aboriginal communities of their heritage. And we thought it was very, very important to have that damage recognized and have something happen that would be of assistance in creating the opportunity for that to thrive again. And fourthly, we thought that it was very important that there be some sort of memorialization and reconciliation to be done. We looked at what had happened in South Africa with their Truth and Reconciliation Commission. If you know the history of the residential schools and you read the government policies, the process of segregation and of removing children from families fits right in with the UN definition of genocide, and so there is just no doubt that there were similarities between what happened in this country and what was exercised in South Africa for years. And we thought it important for the Aboriginal people to have the opportunity to record their stories, to share their stories with the rest of the community, which remained quite ignorant of that situation. And we had actually applied for there to be some sort of memorialization and reconciliation ceremony. Very unusual approach to be taken in a lawsuit, but this was so much more than a lawsuit. The response from the defendants was surprising. The defendants, of course, were the federal government and also the church organizations who ran the schools. The United Church was involved, the Presbyterian Church was involved. Neither of those two churches had any schools in this area. The schools here were run by the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church. The response of the federal government, in my view, was nothing short of vicious. And the church's responses varied. I believe that there were some who truly tried to remember the Christian mission that they espouse. Most did not. The strength of the opposition to the lawsuits and the strength to the opposition to accept responsibility of the damage that had been caused to tens and tens and tens of thousands of human beings in these schools really did take us by surprise, because it was in 1998, I think, that James Stewart, on behalf of the federal government, had issued some sort of an apology. The Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples had been had released their report in 1996, I think, and I read from that earlier. And the government itself knew of the horrors that were happening in these schools from the 1920s, maybe before, but I recall the 1920s was when the first reports I saw of independent emissaries being sent out to these schools to investigate what's happening and reporting back to the government things like, you have to do something because half the children are dying before they can even finish their course of study in these schools. So with all of this background, it was very, very difficult to understand why the government and why the churches would not step up to the plate and acknowledge responsibility, exercise compassion, exhibit a little bit of understanding for the Christian principles that they espouse. Not everybody was like that, but most fought us very, very hard. It was on May 31st, 2005, that the government finally came to us and said, we will sit down with you to see if we can resolve these cases. There weren't very many of us across the country who were dedicated to fighting these cases. Keep in mind, not that I suggest that I'm a hero, and I really mean that. Just keep in mind that there were not very many lawyers across the country who were prepared to not only do this work without pay, but to also fund the litigation for years out of their own pockets. And, you know, it's a pretty tall order. You either have to be wealthy or you have to be a little crazy. And you can guess which one I am, and it's not the first. So at the end of November 2005, the government came to us, and the negotiations started, and the negotiations were between the federal government through their representative, the Honorable Mr. Frank Iacobucci, who used to be a judge on the Supreme Court of Canada. There were representatives from the AFN, Assembly of First Nations, and some other Aboriginal organizations. And there were also lawyers sitting at the table, those of us who had been essentially the pioneers in these lawsuits. Because there were so few of us across the country, we ultimately joined forces together in the year 2000 and started a big, big lawsuit in Ontario where they have class action legislation, and I don't need to get into that, but suffice it to say it was our opportunity to combine our various strengths and talents and work together through an Ontario court to try to get these cases resolved. And it was ultimately that class action which was successful, I think, in getting the settlement to finally happen. So those were the people who were sitting around the table. The negotiations started shortly after the announcement on May 31st, 2005. And by November 23rd, 2005, after great effort, we signed an agreement in principle with the former Liberal government. 4 days later, the Liberal government fell, and it took until May of 2006 for the new Conservative government to determine that they would honor the agreement in principle. The specific details were worked out, and we at least had achieved a settlement with the government. This now brings us up currently, and I probably have about five more minutes to tell you, but because the settlement would settle most of the lawsuits across the country, it will settle the lawsuit of anyone who began a lawsuit and who wants to settle. Nobody's forced to take the settlement. But because the settlement would resolve so many lawsuits, the next legal step for us was to go to the courts. We had to seek approval of the courts where the lawsuits were filed. And there's nine big legal jurisdictions, which means that we needed to make applications in front of a judge in each of those nine areas of the country. Those applications were done in September and October past 2005. By December 15th, we heard from eight out of the nine judges who approved the settlements, and on Monday, we heard from the ninth judge accepting the settlement on behalf of those who had filed a lawsuit who wants to accept the settlement. Thank you to the Creator for that. It's almost over. There are still legal steps to be followed. In these nine jurisdictions now, some of the judges have wanted to work out some different kinds of details, and so we now will need to work with those judges to enter the various court orders in the various legal areas or legal jurisdictions. So that's paperwork, that's more meetings. That will take a few weeks. After those orders are filed, there is an automatic 2 months waiting period, during which time people can file appeals to that order, to any of those orders. When that 2 months expires, then there is a 150-day period of time, or about five months, during which time people who do not want the settlement, who are not satisfied with it and want to pursue something on their own, they are given the opportunity to come forward to opt out. If individuals who are entitled to the settlement do not opt out, they are automatically included in the benefits of the settlement. So, by the time we go through those last steps, and most of that time is just waiting, it will be October before the settlement actually becomes official and the people will start to see, to realize the benefits under the settlement package. So what is it? It is so important, as we see now petty differences arise and we see the money grabs that are being made out and the old people who are already being victimized, and we hear of the people out there trying to advance loans at exorbitant interest rates. It's very, very important to realize why we started this work in the first place and what the settlement is supposed to do. Is it concentrates not only on providing some compensation, monetary compensation for those who suffered in the schools, but it also emphasizes the healing aspect that those of us had wanted to achieve who had started working on these cases right from the beginning. there's four components to this settlement package. First of all, there's the common experience payment. It is a lump sum based on how long each individual was required to stay in those schools. And the common experience payment is to represent a recognition by the government of the loss of language and culture. There is an opportunity for those who were sexually abused, seriously physically abused, or harmed in other ways that caused serious psychological damage to seek further compensation for those abuses. That's what I talked about at the beginning, about the general damages for those legally recognized wrongs. There is also the opportunity to seek compensation for loss of opportunity through the lack of education, deficient educational foundation that was provided at those